Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I'm your host, Scott White. And what are we doing this time? Well, this is what we're going to call a bonus episode. For those of you who don't know, I've started a new podcast called Which Is More Gooder, where I take two things and usually have a guest and we compare them and we talk about them. And then at the end of the podcast, we both give our votes on which is more gooder. The podcast, it's been out for a while, hasn't picked up a lot of steam, so I thought I would promote it here on the Dan Aykroyd Podcast, and I picked one that has to do with Dan Aykroyd, sort of. The two movies that we reviewed in this podcast have a lot of Dan Aykroyd co-stars in it. I'm picking Three Amigos versus Coming to America. Three Amigos, of course, has Chevy Chase and Steve Martin. Dan Aykroyd has starred in movies with both of them, and Coming to America has Eddie Murphy, which he starred with Trading Places, one of Eddie Murphy's first movies. So what I want you to do is listen to the podcast here. If you enjoy it, find Which Is More Gooder on any place where you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, go back, listen to the other episodes, and help me gain an audience that is just as big and just as popular as this one, the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I appreciate everyone's support, and I'm just going to pass it over and listen to Which Is More Gooder, and I'll see everybody here next time.
All right. Which is more gooder? Which is more gooder? Which is more gooder?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Which Is More Gooder podcast. I am your host, Scott White, and I am joined once again by my good friend, Steph DeWagoner.
Hi. Once again, but I don't think I've done this podcast.
No. Yes, you have.
Have I done this one before?
Foul Play and...
That's right.
Wow. And your fucking ice maker just goes
start,
off.
You want to start again?
No, we're going to keep all this in. We're going to keep in the goddamn ice maker. So, and the dogs fighting. Jesus Christ. Is there maybe some constructional start while we're doing this?
Maybe the Long Isle show.
Yeah.
Maybe the Long Isle show.
Yes, you did.
I forgot.
Foul Play and Seems Like Old Time. So
that's right.
So go back and check that one out.
I forgot.
But this one, the two movies we're doing are John Landis directed movies, Three Amigos from 1986 and Coming to America 1988.
So I was racking my brain trying to figure out why you had put these together, and because I had completely forgotten that John Landis had directed Three Amigos. Uh-huh. I was like, why is he putting, like, this is not the pairing I would do. And then I realized why when I saw that it was John Landis. I've not seen Three Amigos in a long time. Coming to America is one of my favorites, though, so this will be interesting.
It was opposite for me. I had not seen Coming to America in a long time, and I recently watched that. So we're going to start with Three Amigos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it came out in 1986.
That makes sense.
The budget was $25 million, made about $40 million. It has 6.5 on IMDb and 45% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it stars Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and Martin Short as the Three Amigos.
We've talked about Chevy Chase a lot on some of your different podcasts.
Yes.
And I saw this in the movie theaters.
So did I.
And I honestly, I probably have seen it a couple times since then, but like I say, it's been a while. I actually remember this movie being funnier. I did not, when I watched it in preparation for this, I was sort of like, oh, I remember this movie being funnier. Why is this not as funny to me anymore? I found it really heavy-handed with the... I felt like the acting was really heavy-handed for some reason, and I don't know if they were going for a style. You know, I know obviously when they were in the style of the Three Amigos, like in the style of the movie, the silent movie Cowboys, that's very over-actory, but I don't know. So, just in general, I sort of was kind of disappointed or let down a little bit that I didn't remember that movie being...
I really like this movie. I really enjoy the Three Amigos, so... one thing about it was whenever you have like three A-list celebrities basically all sharing the screen. I read a lot of reviews where they said that Steve Martin and Martin Short worked really well, and they didn't mention Chevy Chase a lot, but I thought Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and Martin Short all did a great job as co-leads in this movie. I don't think one outshined another very much.
I do think it was very even-handed. I think Martin Short had probably the most well-rounded character of anybody in this movie. I also, it's surprising that you see Chevy Chase sort of take a, like, he's sort of the dumber person.
I was just about to say that. They're not, all three of them are, it's sort of like the Three Stooges.
Right.
All three of them are dumb, but like Curly's dumb. That's how it was.
Moe's the leader.
Yeah. And that's how it was. And I was just about to say that. That's one of the points I was going to bring up is that Chevy Chase usually plays the smart ass in the movies that he stars in. But yes, he plays the dumber one.
He shows kind of great restraint, I feel like, in this movie where he isn't his normal.
And he calls. And
Dusty Bottoms.
And they make fun of him. Well, they don't make fun of him, but they point things out. And yes, I thought he did a good job sort of playing against type.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because knowing kind of more of what we know now about kind of Chevy Chase and people working with him and that he can be difficult to work with and stuff, it made me wonder. But I didn't really see anything or hear anything about
that. I haven't either. And I think it might be because he considers Steve Martin and Martin Short
peers, equals,
yeah. And as well as John Landis. Lorne Michaels wrote this movie, co-wrote this movie.
So that's interesting too, right? It's Steve Martin, Lorne Michaels, and
Randy Newman,
which is interesting.
And I know he's a big Randy Newman fan, Chevy Chase.
Right. So
I think he was just surrounded by people who he thought was equal to his talent. Because I haven't heard any bad things about this movie either, behind the scenes.
It's interesting because there's things on IMDb about how this movie seemed like it was in pre-production for a long time, like 5 or 6 years. And it looks like it went through a lot of iterations in the studio where at one point it was Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and
Robin Williams. Yeah.
And there was a John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy maybe version. And there was something in there that had Martin Short not done it, he was going to ask Rick Moranis, which I could totally see. Yeah.
Well, Belushi died in 82,
right.
So that means that this movie must have been kicking around a long time.
They were referencing a Rolling Stone article, I think, where they were talking about making the Three Caballeros, and which references the Disney cartoon.
Right.
So I will agree with that. They play well together. It's very even. It's nobody's, you don't feel like anybody's like hamming it up over the other two.
Nobody outshines anybody in this movie. And the guy who plays, I think the guy who plays El Guapo.
Yes.
He sort of steals the show. He's sort of the scene stealer in this one.
He was a pretty popular character actor back around that time, playing kind of these slightly unhinged bad guys. And I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but yeah, I think that good casting. Every Latino, Latin American character actor of the day is.
They didn't brownface it.
No. They have authentic Hispanic, but every like Latino character actor you can think of is in this movie. There's not really any big female lead.
No.
Co-stars.
The one that summons the three amigos, who is kidnapped by El Guapo, who they have to.
Yeah.
Rescue. But no, there is no meaty female character in this movie. I like the scene, the whole room full of Saturday Night Live, when it was Joe Mantegna, John Lovitz, Phil Hartman, Chevy, Steve, and Martin Short all in the room together.
And I think John Lovitz, and that was, wasn't that current to John Lovitz and Phil Hartman?
They were both on SNL. They were both on SNL at
that time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought we were quite good in it.
Good? We were great.
Why don't you tell the boys about the Cochise picture, Morty?
Sandy and Irving are working on it right now. You meet Cochise. At first, you think he's a terrible guy. You fight. Then, you get to know him. You come to respect each other. And at the end of the picture, you're friends.
We send you boys to Baja, and we shoot the picture in 8 days. What do you think?
That'll be the day.
What did he say?
He said, that'll be the day, Mr. Flugelman.
What?
I don't think you understand who you're talking to here. We have a few items we want to straighten out first, or you might be looking at three actors who really don't feel like making a Geronimo picture.
What the hell are you talking about?
Lucky, I think maybe we should...
What we're talking about is money. Real money. Amigo money. No dough, no show.
Boys! Boys! Let me just say one thing. It'll be a cold day in hell when Harry Flugelman lets an actor tell him what to do! Do you know what the word nada means? In all those Mexican movies you made, did you ever hear that word?
Isn't that a light chicken gravy that you just...
It means nothing. Zero. Zip. It's what you're gonna have when I'm through with you. You hit Harry Flugelman on a bad day.
I'd like to continue to work for free, Mr. Flugelman.
Are you living in the studio mansion?
Yeah.
Well, not anymore, you're not. Sam!
The amigos are out of the mansion.
Where did you get those clothes? From a movie?
Yeah, the studio gave them to us. Those darn amigos.
Well, we're taking them back. Sam!
Get wardrobe over here right away. Take the amigos' clothes.
Wait a minute. You can't take our clothes. You gave us these clothes. They were presents.
Come on, wait a minute.
Lucky.
Wait a second. I think you misread who you're talking to here.
Misread? I want these schmucks off of my lot. Your asses have just been streamlined. The three amigos are history.
Yeah, nice to see them in there. It made me laugh because I was thinking about you and I on the Dan Aykroyd podcast recently did Into the Night, which is a John Landis movie. We recently talked about that, and there was a lot of cameos and things like that movie. This movie doesn't have as many just oddball cameos.
No, I don't think this movie is... It's not made for those cameos.
They're... Do you think, knowing that John Landis, you know, is sort of a, has an appreciation for old movies, old films, do you think of this as being more of an homage to, like, the silent films, or do you think this is more of a parody of, like, The Magnificent Seven?
I think it's more of an homage to silent films and the Cisco Kid, the old serials.
Like the serials and stuff? Yeah. It's funny because if you watch the trailer, because I watched this on Prime, you can watch it on Prime, it's available, and you can, of course, watch, you know, when you get Prime, you get the trailer and stuff. When you watch the trailer, they do a good job of the trailer. Like, if you'd gone to the movies and saw this, you wouldn't know for the first 60 seconds that this was a comedy. You would totally think you were watching, like, a spaghetti western trailer, because it's all action, the church is blowing up, and the cowboys, and they're shooting, and it's not until... You ever notice movies where there's a scene in the trailer that's never in the movie?
Yeah,
but
that
somehow
happens a
it's
lot.
In the trailer because it helps gel things. So there's a scene like that in the trailer where we need someone to help us, and then they reveal Chevy Chase, Steve Martin. So yeah, for a minute you think this is some action movie, some western, you know. But you could definitely see his knowledge or love for old movies in this that comes up. They have fun with that. I kind of wish there would have been more silent movie scenes. I would have liked to see more, like, of the three amigos, like, clips from their movies almost.
They could have said, remember, because they would remember what we did in Amigos, Amigos, Amigos. It was like, maybe...
It would have been funny to see a flashback.
Yes, and then we could see a flashback of them, of the... actual black and white movie.
Because it would be funny to see how they applied it in the movie and then had to apply it in real life.
Right, and then they could see how it would mess up.
They're basically trying to do things they did in a movie to fix a real life situation.
So, if you haven't seen Three Amigos, what happens is...
Oh yeah, I guess we should tell everyone.
Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, and Martin Short are these movie actors called the Three Amigos. And they get fired. So, there's a town in Mexico being threatened by this guy called El Guapo.
Yeah, it's Guapo. Like World War I era.
Yeah.
It's World War I, so I guess we should say that.
Yes. And this village is being terrorized by these banditos.
Yeah.
And one of a woman from the village goes into town and they sees a Three Amigos picture. And they think that they are real. They think this is real. They're real crime fighters, they're real heroes. So she sends a wire to them to come and vanquish El Guapo. While that's happening, they get fired from their Hollywood jobs. And the moment they get fired, this telegram arrives. So they realize, okay, we'll go here and get paid.
They misread the telegram.
Well, it's a couple of... It's a mishap. When they send a telegram, they only have a certain amount of money. So they edit it down. And going back, when they read it, they're stupid. So they think infamous means infamous. That he's more than famous, he's infamous. So they're like, oh, you know, they want us to put on a show. They grab their costumes, they head to Mexico.
And when she says stop, and when we need your help to stop El Guapo, they read it as a telegram and stop. That like the punctuation yes. in a telegram. So they misread what they're. They think they're supposed to go do a show for some infamous Mexican leader named El Guapo.
Yeah, this El Guapo guy must be very important. He wants a show. So they head to Mexico. And also, so El Guapo is buying guns from the Germans. So all this is, so there's a bit of intrigue going on. So the amigos are heading to Mexico. The bandidos are buying guns for the Germans. So we have the three amigos. We have
this German biplane
yes.
pilot and a couple of shifty German criminals. And they're all out on this, out in Old Tucson. I'm sure it's got to be Old Tucson. They're in some old movie, Mexican town movie lot in Old Tucson.
So when they get there, they intermix with everybody in the village. And then a couple of bandidos come. I mentioned the Three Stooges before. And when we watched Into the Night, there was references to Laurel and Hardy and the Three Stooges. There's many scenes in this movie where all three of them are sleeping in the same bed.
Yes.
A la the Three Stooges.
Right.
And I thought that was, I think that is homage to the Three Stooges.
Right.
Because it's like, what are you going to do with the money? I'm going to buy a car. What are you going to do? I'm going to make a trip around the world. What are you going to do? I'm going to donate it to...
I'm going to start an orphanage.
Yes. Or, yeah. Oh, well, me too. Yeah. So the chemistry between the three are good.
Yes.
And when you think, because it's like you think of, you know, Chevy Chase and Steve Martin, you think of them as... They were movie stars at the time. I really don't... It's like... I know Martin Short has made movies, but there's not like, you know, Caddyshack or The Jerk. Steve Martin and Chevy Chase have like these signature
right.
movies.
Right.
And I don't... Martin Short doesn't really have one of those. Now, he's brilliantly funny, and I loved him on SCTV and all the stuff he's done. But he doesn't have like a signature movie.
Yeah, I mean, I would think Frank in Father of the Bride.
Yeah, but that's not really his movie. That's Steve Martin's movie.
Right, right. And then Interspace.
That was a good movie, but when you think of Martin Short, you're not going to think of Interspace.
About Captain Ron.
Captain Ron.
See, that's when I start my Kurt Russell podcast, we'll have to talk about Captain Ron. Yeah. That would be good. But you're right. I mean, especially up until then, like, Interspace hadn't come out yet. So he really had done... He'd come off as...
SNL.
SCTV.
SCTV and SNL. Because all three of them hosted SNL when this came out.
I will agree with you on that. I will not disagree with you on that. I think that's probably correct.
It is correct. A couple of bandidos ride in and they do this... They do their show... And it scares them. It doesn't scare them away, but they're like, we better tell El Guapo this.
Yeah, they're like, they don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah.
They're these flashy dressed guys. They're doing a little song and dance. Yeah.
So we meet. So they go into. So the Germans, a German goes into a bar and it's all these bandidos in there. And German shoots one of them. He's like, I'm going to have some friends coming in. Better be nice to them. And then the three amigos come in,
right.
And they think, so they're, you know, they're singing and dancing My Little Buttercup. And
That's a scene in particular, by the way, where I feel like Chevy Chase, that's what I said, he showed great restraint. He's overplaying the piano in the corner. He's not even in the number singing and dancing. You know, that's when they drink the tequila, though.
Yes.
That is probably, to me, the funniest thing in that movie is when they drink the tequila. They all have that, like, literal knee-jerk reaction.
They all have a knee-jerk reaction. It's perfect timing.
It's perfect
timing. I don't know how many takes they had to get, but it's perfect timing. It, like a cartoon, they all take a drink, they take a second, and they all... Bah!
Yeah.
And they all strike a pose, very and it's funny. All in perfect timing.
They need more of that. So, yeah, the locals have no idea what to think of these guys. The bandidos are a little confused.
Yeah.
They leave, and then the actual Germans, who he was warning them, the two kind of Germans in their bow ties and hats, yeah. but they're supposed to be like these German, you know, tough guys or whatever, come in, and they kind of, I don't know, to break the tension with, they're like, look at these sissy boys!
Yeah.
And little do they know that those guys don't waste any time. No, they just start firing, shooting at people, so.
So El Guapo shows up, and they realize that it's for real. And I thought that was a nice scene where Steve Martin gets shot and he doesn't give me that gun. They're using real bullets. And then
kind of dawns on him then. Wait a minute.
It dawns on him and he walks back and it's real. And this, the face that Chevy Chase and Martin Short make when they're like, they're just about to.
Because part of that, they're running around, they're doing all their Three Amigos stuff.
And yes,
at
it's
first
like,
he's sort of entertained by it, like, what is going on here? But yeah, then El Guapo takes care of all
And then El Guapo kidnaps the woman. Yes.
Now here's my other issue with this movie. There's not enough established between, there's a couple of knowing kind of flirty looks between she and Steve Martin. And then between one of the girls playing her sister and Chevy Chase, there's a like, you know, do you want to kiss me? But there's not ever, to me, I don't think there's enough invested in it where Steve Martin would be like, we have to save her. You know, there just isn't, there's no real romance.
There is no real romance. And I think, my opinion is, I don't think they rescue her because of love. I think they rescue them just for...
Because they think that's what they're supposed to do. Because they're the Three Amigos.
Maybe it's their conscience, or maybe they don't want to look like fools. I don't think it has. I think the romance might have something.
Well, they basically say we don't have anything to go back to. We might as well do this. And I think they still do. They still think there's money on the line at that point, or do they kind of realize?
No, they take really their money. They take their money at first, and they eventually give it back at the end of the movie.
Like they do in their movies when they're the Three Amigos. That's always this big of, we don't need money. It's just, I know, I read something saying that John Landis was disappointed because the studio really intervened and edited the crud out of this movie. And so he was not 100% happy with even the final cut because they just edited a lot of stuff. And so it makes me wonder if there was a little bit more character development in a couple of spots. Because you don't get any deep character development in anybody else. Not even these three, really.
No.
The most you ever find out is that Martin Short's character, Ned Niedermeyer, was a child star. He was a little Neddy and had a series of little Neddy movies.
Right. And so the head German he learned how to quick draw from Martin Short.
Yeah, he was a fan of Little Ned movies.
Yeah. Well, so what?
We're jumping around.
Yeah. So the Three Amigos go to rescue her. We all know that John Landis loves music, and there's just like a litter, what was it, blue, purple? They do a little campfire song.
Yes. The little animals.
Yes, the animals singing. And once they get to El Guapo's camp, this is... This was the line that me and my friends would quote. It's El Guapo's birthday. El Guapo is one of his sidekick. It's like, you have a bunch of piñatas. Would you say I have a plethora of piñatas? Oh, definitely. You have a plethora of piñatas. What does plethora mean? And then he goes, he explains, don't you, I shouldn't really do it in that, do the accent, but he goes, don't you think that you're taking it out on me because the woman that you kidnapped doesn't want to have sex with you. So. But that's when I was growing up, it was always a plethora of piñatas.
Jefe, the German arrived yet?
Not yet, guapo. Many presents have been coming for your birthday.
German has the only presents I want. Guns. Guns so that the name of El Guapo will be hanging on everyone's lips.
He will be here, guapo. But I think you would like your other presents, too. I have put many beautiful piñatas in the storeroom, each of them filled with little surprises.
Many piñatas?
Oh, yes, many!
Would you say I have a plethora? of piñatas.
A what?
A plethora.
Oh, yes. You have a plethora.
Jefe, what is a plethora?
Why, guapo?
Well, you told me I have a plethora. And I just would like to know if you know what a plethora is. I would not like to think that a person would tell someone he has a plethora and find out that that person has no idea what it means to have a plethora.
You skipped over the singing bush, which makes no sense at all. Like, why is this singing bush that
they have to,
some kind of Moses?
They're given directions and they have to go to the singing bush, which was
Randy Newman.
They all have to say, they all have to say a phrase and shoot their gun in the air. And Steve Martin, his phrase is huffer, 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 which was referenced to his character in The Man with Two Brains, Dr. Huffer. Chevy Chase just ends up shooting the... I love the fact that they've gone this far, and then all of a sudden Chevy Chase is like, this is stupid. It's like, well, you've gone this far, and now you think it's stupid? It's...
The singing bush is funny. They have a whole other scene where in the background you just hear the bush.
There, that, yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Good night, lady. Good night, lady. Good night, lady. I hate this.
It's like some kind of Moses. Like, it's a weird reference. It's just weird. I could just see them all sitting around probably stoned out of their minds being, you're like, you know what would be funny? Wapo's having his birthday and they're having, they do pretty well in these dusty little towns with piñatas and decorations, and it's the second celebration in the movie like this where there's all these piñatas and...
So what happens when they go to rescue her, they all get separated. Steve Martin gets captured. Chevy Chase actually gets into a room. And Martin Short gets hung up on a piñata. And they put Steve Martin in this jail where the weights are...
That part's funny too. It's counter. It's like a counterweight.
It's a counterweight. So.
So he's trying to get to where if he can get.
Now this is, it's a counterweight. There's a release lever. So if you make it to the release lever, you can deactivate the counterweights. And they lock him up and they drop the key. It's like try to reach it, which he eventually does.
Before he gets slammed back.
Before he gets slammed back on the wall a couple of times. And Chevy Chase and the woman that they're trying to rescue, he's like, okay, I'm going to go try to find the other two. You get some horses, meet us by the front door. And she goes, that's a good plan. And he's like, he's beaming. He's like, oh, thank you. Yeah, finally did something smart. But El Guapo is talking to him. And my buddy, Rodriguez. But yeah, we raped the cows, and we stampled the women. It's just Chevy Chase being Chevy Chase.
Yes.
And at this point, Martin Short drops from the sky. He was supposed to swing into camp, and he swings in, and his spurs get caught in a piñata. So he is literally hanging over the feast.
They have this big, like, maypole dance thing where the piñata is on the stuff right hand. Yeah, and he's been hanging there, stretched out
for a really long time. And he falls down, and then Ned challenges him to a fast gun duel.
Right.
Which, of course, Martin Short wins in a comical way. They all escape, and they go back to the village, and they realize El Guapo was going to come and get them.
Yeah, he's going to want revenge. He wants, you know.
So then it's like, remember what we did in, you know, Amigos Over the Border? This gave me Blazing Saddle vibes when in Blazing Saddle they rebuild
the town.
They rebuild a town. They fake build a town.
Right.
In this one, they turn everybody into an amigo. So they put all the amigos.
But you don't know that.
You don't know that.
They're just sewing.
They're
sewing.
Just sewing.
They're sewing. Remember, we could do it. Remember that thing we did? Yeah, we could do it. And they're sewing. They're showing everybody sewing. You're not sure what are they sewing. They're sewing. And they keep doing all these close-ups of sewing machines, and there's no thread in the needles. I don't know if you caught that, but they keep showing these close-ups of them sewing, and there's no thread in the sewing machines. But, eh. So anyway, yes, they're sewing like crazy. The grandmas are hand sewing. Ned's helping them sew. Like, they've got all these little sewing machines. And here comes El Guapo with 50 of his banditos to try to overtake the town.
And it turns out that they've all sewn Three Amigos costumes. So everybody in the village is using Three Amigo costumes. And they start shooting. And it, the way they film it is, it's Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and Martin Short. So they're in all the shots. But at the end, they all, after they shoot everybody, which, okay, so if you have all these guns, why did you have to dress up like the Amigos? When they ride into town, just shoot them.
It made me laugh, because that's also kind of the end of Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything.
I haven't seen that movie, yeah.
It's sort of the end of that movie, too. So, spoiler alert. Everybody's a drag queen at the end of that movie.
Yeah. Or what is it, The Birdcage, where they have to dress Gene
Hackman
up.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, okay, that one too. Yeah, where it's like, we're just going to have everybody mingle in. Yeah, I mean, it's cute. It's a funny idea. Everybody from the grandmas to the little kids, like literally everybody in this town is dressed as the Three Amigos. As sort of a, what's the, not a MacGuffin, but what's it, like where you want to fake them out. The idea is that we're going to fake them out. It's like, how can the Three Amigos be everywhere? Because they are. It's the whole town.
And they shoot. There's a lot of people get shot in this movie.
John Landis doesn't have a problem with that.
No.
At least he didn't shoot a horse or shoot another dog or anything.
So Steve Martin kisses
Carmen.
Chevy Chase kisses the woman that he was talking to. And then all of a sudden this voluptuous Latino woman comes out. And she
Playboy centerfold Landis cast.
And she lays it on Martin Short.
He's the only one that gets a real, like, kiss. Yeah. Because it's really cute in the movie. Because Steve Martin, he has this little moment with her. They kiss. And he goes, well, maybe I'll come back. She goes, why? Like, you know, this girl. In any normal movie, she'd be like, oh, I hope so. And she's like, you don't have to. You don't have to come back. So, and I know they were setting this movie up to have, like, a Three Amigos 2, and it never happened.
No, because it barely made back its money.
I thought what was going to happen, and I honestly forgot. I could not remember the end of this movie. I really thought what was going to happen is Martin Short was going to stay behind with the kids, and, like, I'm going to stay here. I found my calling. I'm going to stay here and, you know, start an orphanage and help the kids or teach acting or whatever to the kid, you know, that, like, he found his piece. But actually, it's kind of cool. They don't. They all ride off. They literally ride off into the sunset together.
Singing a Three Amigos song.
Yes.
Like I said, this movie barely made back its budget. However, it has become, in VHS and then DVD, it has become a cult classic.
Did you used to do the Three Amigos, their salute?
Yeah, they have a salute.
Turn and cough.
And that, anything else on the Three Amigos?
No, I have to say, it, the end is good. Like, they don't give you this schmaltzy, like, you know, I'm going to do this. Or we're going to stay in this town. Like, it's realistic that they wouldn't stay in this goofy little Mexican town. They leave. So they ride off in the sunset, just like one of their movies.
All right. Now we're going to talk to Coming to America.
Yes.
Coming out in 1988. Budget of $36 million. Box office, they say between $288 million and $350 million. So this was a mega smash hit.
Yes. Starring Eddie Murphy.
7.1 on IMDb and 73% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I was surprised that the rating wasn't higher on IMDb. Honestly, I expected it to be.
Well, 7 is pretty good. Most movies on IMDb are somewhere between the 5 and the 6. So 7 is pretty good.
So when, last year, or maybe 2 years ago on Facebook, there was this thing where every day you post a picture from, it was supposed to be every day for 10 days, you post a picture of a movie that influenced you or was important. Coming to America was one of my movies I picked. Because that is, to me, it's almost the perfect blend of, like, it's a modern day fairy tale, it's a good romantic comedy. They're just, to me, it checks a lot of boxes.
Right. And it was Eddie Murphy.
Arsenio Hall.
I mean, it's got a great cast. Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, James Earl Jones, John Amos. I can't think the woman who plays the love interest is very... The whole cast is great.
There's good little cameos in this. This is Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes.
Like his first movie.
Louis Anderson's in there.
Louis Anderson.
I don't really think we can call them cameos because I don't think they're really famous at the time.
There's even like some of the...
You know who's in this movie? Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, and the great Madge Sinclair plays the queen.
Yes.
So if anybody of you used to watch Trapper John M.D., you remember Madge Sinclair from that. But, yeah, there's even a couple of, if anybody watches The Housewives or Morning Talk Shows, Garcelle, I can't pronounce her name, Bouveau, she's one of his attendants, one of the Prince Hakim's attendants. So.
And the gist of this movie is Eddie Murphy is going to be forced into a marriage that doesn't want to go into.
He's so the prince. He's the prince of Zamunda.
And talking about, so there's a really big, when they announce his wedding, there's a really big musical number, and I got really big Blues Brothers vibes from that big, huge musical number.
This movie is so visually satisfying.
This is a spectacle. Movie is a spectacle.
I love that Eddie Murphy, because of his star power, was able to elevate this story and really get like these beautiful costumes. So it wasn't just that he's some African prince. He's the prince of this lush, you know, vibrant little pocket of Africa where, you know, the animals roam free and, you know, his father, they have jewels and big crowns and it's very much of a fairy tale. It's sort of a switched fairy tale. It's a reverse fairy tale, right? It's usually the princess who has to marry some prince she didn't want to marry, and she has to go out and this is a flip on that. This is a reverse on that. He's the prince that's supposed to marry, and he's got this beautiful girl that's been raised to be his perfect wife, that will do anything for him, that is his submissive to him.
Yeah,
and he's bored with it. He doesn't want that.
Now I will. So the movie starts with him turning 21, and yes. I like Eddie Murphy, but he can't pull off 21 in this movie. He's not 21.
And Arsenio Hall is his faithful, like, manservant, but also his best friend.
Yeah. Arsenio Hall looked weird in this movie.
Because he didn't have a mustache.
Yeah. And this is the first, I believe this is the first movie where Eddie Murphy plays multiple roles.
Oh, possibly.
Which became a staple for him, like, you know, Nutty Professor, Orbit, like all his future movies, he would play multiple roles. I think this is the first movie where he did that.
That's probably correct, because I was trying to think of prior to coming to America.
He had 48 Hours.
Right. Like, he really,
Beverly Hills Cop.
Right.
The Golden Child.
Right. So they weren't really that kind of a movie where he would have been doing like different characters.
Eddie Murphy ends up coming to the States. He comes to Queens.
He wants to find, where do you go to find a queen? Where else? Right. You know?
And when we did the Into the Night podcast, you told me that John Landis has a thing where he uses Frank Oz's name. It happens in this movie.
Yes.
When they land in New York, Frank Obensteyer or whatever his real name is.
At the airport.
Yeah. So I got that.
So it's also a fish out of water story.
Yeah.
You know, it's the sort of this, you send this prince who's used to having everything done for him, like he's bathed, he's, you know, he's always had people serve him, and plop him down in the middle of Queens.
The twist on this is, usually when you have a fish out of water movie like that, if a rich person is plopped into a poor person's, they always bitch and complain. And that's not, but that's what Eddie Murphy doesn't do that. That's what Arsenio Hall is the bitching and the moaning person.
All that. Yeah, Eddie Murphy wants to sow his wild oats, and he wants to soak up the experience. And
he doesn't want to sow his oats.
Oh, that's right. His father wants him to sow his wild oats. Yes, that's what his father
says. He wants to find a woman that stimulates him, as he says, intellectually and sexually.
Yes. So yeah, they're in the middle of Queens. They got all this luggage and all these lavish their coats with the lion's heads and all that stuff. And they go into the mighty Sharp barbershop, right?
Right. The Mighty Sharp Barbershop. And this is where we first see Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall in one of their characters. They play the barber. And Eddie Murphy, he also plays this Jewish man. That might be some of the best makeup I've ever seen in my life.
I tell you, my brother and I to this day, my little brother and I, we quote that movie, yeah. We quote that. What is this, velvet?
Like, is beautiful.
You know.
It is, that might be some of the best makeup. You would not know, if somebody told you that, if you didn't know that was Eddie Murphy, the other ones you can tell, okay.
Right.
You would not know that's Eddie Murphy.
Agreed. And those scenes of the barbershop are just so funny and just genuine. And these guys are arguing over Cassius Clay. I don't even know if that's the scene right there where they're...
Cassius Clay was a great fighter.
Right. Hey,
God damn it. Every time we talk about boxing, a white man brings up Rocky Marciano.
Right. It's just funny. It's just very much that...
They told me about Frank Sinatra was sitting in his chair. God, you did not know that because Frank Sinatra.
It's just funny. And, they come in and he wants the real experience, right? He wants to know.
And they did a smart thing. So there's three barbers and two are Arsenio and Eddie Murphy. But they hired another actor. So that other actor can be in the scenes with so if there had to be a scene where Eddie Murphy was young, they could put that actor with. They could put that actor next to Eddie Murphy, right. So he could actually talk to himself, but it wouldn't look like it was just, you know, him talking to himself.
Right.
And then there's the famous where he goes out looking for women at a bar, and all they just do that montage of crazy women.
Yes. Yes, including Arsenio Hall is one of the women.
One of the women, yeah. Arsenio does just. A good job as playing other characters as Eddie Murphy. He does a good job.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, they get the typical rat hole apartment in Queens, and Arsenio Hall's complaining the whole time, and Eddie Murphy's like, oh, this is good. I'm really learning to live like this. And they get jobs.
When they fail to find a woman at the bar, one of the bartenders says, I'm going to this... black.
That's right. Where do you meet people? You meet nice girls at church. You go to church. You meet nice girls at church, at community. I'm going to a community rally.
It was a rally to promote black businesses.
Right.
And
like a fundraiser.
A fundraiser. And that's where we first meet John Amos, who is the owner of McDowell's.
McDowell's. So funny.
And his daughter. And his daughter gets up and makes a speech, and so Eddie Murphy is totally mesmerized. And what I like this about it is she was an attractive woman, but she wasn't ba-da-da-da-da. It wasn't this blonde, not blonde, but wasn't this bombshell,
right?
Sex symbol actress. It was a down to earth woman.
Mm-hmm.
Making a down-to-earth speech, and that's what captured his attention.
Kind of this kind of cute, preppy girl, and the daughter of one of the big business leaders in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And this is another scene where Arsenio Hall is playing like the local reverend. Mm-hmm. This is where we have sexual chocolate. Eddie Murphy, sexual chocolate. There's girls. There's a bunch of girls lined up for like some kind of beauty pageant they're having in bikinis and. Arsenio Hall's like, pick one of those.
Pick ones, let's go home.
He's like, no. They're donating money. There's money going around. Eddie Murphy puts a big chunk of money in the basket.
We also are introduced to her...
Current boyfriend,
who is the son of the inventor of...
You know, you can be all the things you've always wanted to be. Beautiful. Sexy, easy as 1, 2, 3.
Just let your soul glow. Just let it shine through. Just let your soul glow, baby. Feeling oh so silky smooth. Just let it shine through. Just let your soul glow.
Thank you.
Yes, the curls, you know, you got to have your Jerry curl. So it's the prince of the Jerry curl fortune. And again, another recognizable actor from ER, and, you know, people would recognize him, but he's sort of the bad guy. He's sort of the, on the surface, he looks like he's a good guy, but he's really kind of a bad guy. He takes credit. Eddie Murphy puts a big chunk of money in the donation basket, but he takes credit for it. And yeah, he's just kind of a player. But the dad likes him because he's rich.
Because he's rich.
Eric LaSalle. That's who it is. Eric LaSalle.
Well, Eddie Murphy finds out that she works at McDowell's, so he and Arsenio Hall get jobs at McDowell's.
Which is a McDonald's, I don't want to say ripoff, that's not right. But it's basically him trying to do McDonald's without paying the McDonald's franchise fee.
Right. And we get that right off the bat. Somebody from McDonald's has taken this picture of the building. They're McDonald's. We're McDowell's. They have the golden arches.
We have the golden arcs.
They have a Big Mac. We have a Big Mick.
Right.
And then they go, it's two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, onions, but we do not have a sesame seed.
Right. So he's in this thing with McDonald's. And it's
honestly, in real life, that thing would never fly. Right. That would get shut down right away.
Right. Yeah. But again, Eddie Murphy's happy to have the work. He seems like he's, you know, they just think he's some college student, you know, African college student that is just happy to be
working
here
his
in the
way
country.
Through school. Yeah.
Little do they know he's the prince's.
That's the one thing too. So the woman that he meets cannot know that he is a prince.
He wants her to love him for who he is. Right. And she's very nice to him. She's very nice to him all the time. She genuinely, you know, talks to him and
yeah, she does, which I didn't have a lot of problems with the movie, but one problem I did have is it comes out slowly that her boyfriend is
a jerk.
And I can't see those two together. She is such a nice person. I cannot see her being with that person, because he doesn't even, there's like one point where he throws a shake at Eddie Murphy and it splatters all over him. She would have jumped to Eddie Murphy's defense at that point, unless she didn't see it. But there's so many scenes where it's just like, I can't see her with him.
I always felt it was something because that's what her father wanted to do. That's what she was expected to do. That's what her sister was telling her to do, you know. So I figured that she just was doing it because she thought that's what she was supposed to do, you know. But then she meets this genuine soul. She has like a genuine connection with Akeem when they have these nice little quiet moments, you know. And they get to talk and stuff like that, so. But it's, I'm trying to think, when does, so they're working at McDowell's, and then they go to don't they get tickets for a game, a basketball game?
Yes, they get
tickets for a
basketball game, and she invites Eddie Murphy, and he's happy, but then he realizes.
To be a date for her sister.
Right.
Patrice. And that's where he's almost outed, because he's waiting for the men's room.
Right.
And
one of his subjects recognizes him,
yeah. And oh my goodness, oh, you know.
And they're like, who was that? Just a man I met in the bathroom.
right. Exactly. So things are going along.
He's slowly gaining her. He's whittling her down, you know.
Yes.
She's seeing what a jerk that her boyfriend is. She's seeing what a good guy that he is.
Yes.
And around this point,
when does the McDowell's get held up? It's right around this.
Right around this point. It's right after the basketball game.
Right, and this also is a little clue for them to be like, maybe he's not who we think he is.
Yeah. Because
all of a sudden, he and Arsenio Hall, whip into one of their routines that they've practiced.
Samuel L. Jackson comes in, and he goes full Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes.
Boy, let's go! Come on!
Wasting
wasting my time now. Come on! Come on! Anybody move, I'll blow your fucking head off. What are you looking at, buddy? Come on! Stop stalling! Come on! Don't stall me! All of it! Come on, come on!
Excuse me for a moment. It would be wise for you to put the weapon down.
Who the fuck is this asshole?
Please refrain from using any further obscenities in the presence of these people.
What?
I've warned you. I'll be forced to thrash you.
Fuck you!
Freeze, you diseased rhinoceros pizzle.
Yes.
Who the fuck are you? What the fuck is... Yeah. And I love the fact... This movie could totally have been PG.
Right.
And I love the fact that they went R.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that they let the F-bomb drop. There's no... That's the only reason. There's no nudity. There's no... Oh, actually, there is nudity.
There is nudity with the bathing girls.
With the bathing girls. Yes, this movie could have easily gone PG, but they didn't. They went with the vision that they wanted, and I appreciate that in the movie as well. And like I said, Louis Anderson is working there, so it was good to see Louis Anderson. I was always a fan of Louis Anderson. And oh, so after that, John Amos. And I always love John Amos. John Amos is a great actor. John Amos invites him to the house, and Eddie Murphy thinks, oh, I'm here. You know, he's invited me as a guest.
Right, right. I'm in with the father. He's having a party, and little does he know he's been hired to be a valet and a bartender.
Yeah.
He and Semi have been hired to work again.
Mm-hmm.
His reward for them doing good work is he's going to give them more work.
Right. And Eddie Murphy plays this character great. All these people are talking down to him. John Amos is like, if you work hard, you could have a house like this in 20 or 30 years. And he never breaks character. He never puts anybody down. The only person he has cross words with is Arsenio Hall.
And he's figured out by now, too, that Eric LaSalle, that the Jerry Curl Prince is not exactly who he should be either. He doesn't like him. You know, so he's really keeping an eye out because he wants to make sure that she, if anything, at least she doesn't end up with him.
And even if you don't end up with me, don't end up with him.
Right. And her younger sister, Patrice, is just waiting for her to drop him so she can move in on him. Exactly.
And at this party, apparently John Amos and, you know, her dad and her boyfriend decide that they're going to get married. And they didn't discuss it with her at all. Because it turns into an engagement party.
The ever popular engagement that has not... That's a good movie trick. It's used a few times where it's like a good plot device where it's like, I'm going to announce our engagement. Because they do it in Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper announces the engagement and he hasn't talked about it. So that always sets good tension where the girl's like,
"Yeah,
you didn't even talk to me about it."
And that sets good tension here. Eddie Murphy is noticeably crushed. Because
she's gonna.
But then they have a nice chat outside, and she realizes, and Eddie Murphy sees his way in. He sees a light. The door isn't closed yet, and so after that.
Is that when he sends the earrings?
He sent the earrings before.
Oh, that's right. And again, Patrice is like, "Oh, it's got to be from Daryl."
No. So Eddie Murphy gets smart,
right?
And he sends the earrings to her and says it's from a secret admirer, not Daryl.
Not Daryl.
Because right. He knows that Daryl...
She's opened it. That's right. Because she's like, ooh, who are you been fooling around with? Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. The sisters all nosy want to know what's going on. That's right. He says not Daryl, so he won't take credit for it.
Yeah. Because Eddie Murphy has figured out what kind of man Daryl is. And I think she knows, too. She just doesn't want to admit it.
And this is also where, just like in You've Got Mail, she's starting to see him in a different light and maybe even starting to think, like, you know, she can't possibly fathom. It doesn't make any sense that it would be Hakeem that gave her the earrings.
Yeah.
But she's growing closer to him.
Right. Yeah, she has no idea.
At that point, Semi's had it.
He's had it. He's like, I'm not going to work. And Eddie Murphy goes, look, if you don't like this place, clean it up, but you're going to work. Well, what happens is Semi, Arsenio Hall, just decks out the room.
This crappy apartment in Queens.
It's luxurious inside. There's like a jacuzzi in there. This becomes important because Eddie Murphy and what's the character's name?
The girl?
Yeah.
Okay, Patrice is the sister. We're going to edit this, right?
Do you have a bad connection on your phone?
No. I'm scrolling through it. Well, she doesn't come up until they get to, like, after the bar. Lisa.
Lisa.
But, I mean, it's way down in the credits, so Lisa.
Why didn't you go to IMDb?
I am. But she's way down in the credits.
Oh, that's, yeah, well, the credits are
in order of
appearance. Okay.
There's a lot that happens before that. So, yeah, Lisa McDowell.
So Akeem has invited Lisa back to his apartment to cook for her. And the reason he does this, he tells her, I live very, very poor. So he's basically saying, I live in a shithole. And she's like, I don't care. And then he gets back to the apartment and Arsenio Hall has decked it out.
He's got neon and a hot tub and music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Eddie Murphy gets pissed at Arsenio and he takes all of his spending money. He convinces Lisa, it's like, well, we can't go in here. There's a big rat. Why don't we go out to eat? And while they're going out to eat, they give the money to
Don Amici
and Ralph Bellamy, from
Trading Places.
So we get a crossover in this movie.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy was in Trading Places with Dan Aykroyd, and they bankrupt these two characters, and so now they're back in this movie as the same characters, and I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people, the people who got it, and the people who didn't. They didn't go out of the way to explain it. Right. Either you got it or you didn't, and I got it, and I thought it was great. So they end up kissing, and he's in love, and he's running back home, and
She's confused.
He's in love, and Arsenio contacts his dad, and like, we need more money, and so he's talking to this typical New Yorker. Oh, you know, she's like, you really want to send this? You're only asking for $300,000. Do you think I should ask for more? Oh yeah. So he sends a telegram.
It's sarcastic.
And he doesn't know, but he sends a telegram to James Earl Jones that they need more spending money. He gets the telegram, and so the whole family comes to New York.
He's like, that's it. We're going to New York.
We're going to New York to get my son.
They got the drums, all the music, really good music.
So James Earl Jones and the whole family arrive, and they go to where he's living, and they eventually get to Arsenio Hall.
He goes to the barber shop.
He goes to the barber shop, and it's just like, who's he looking for? A Kuta. Kuta Kente, you know.
You cannot make that joke.
No, you cannot make that.
That's terrible.
Well, they could make it.
Yes.
A black curb person can make it about another black person. Yeah.
Well, because they were making fun of him in the beginning because he had this braid. He had this princely braid. And yeah. So yeah, they track him down. The father.
They track down the father. The father tracks down John Amos, and John Amos is just over the moon that his daughter is dating a prince.
You kind of can see where the Eddie Murphy character got his good manners from, because Madge Sinclair as the queen is so gracious when she's in the McDowell's home.
Yes,
she's in this house that it's like so beneath her.
Yeah,
but she's so gracious to him, you know, and so nice, and so you see, okay, she probably taught her son to be very gracious.
Yes. So James Earl Jones ends up telling Lisa that Akeem is just here to sow wild oats. Another problem I have with this movie. Why would he pretend to be a penniless sheep herder if he was just there to have sex? Why is he jumping through hoops to see you? Why is he pretending to be poor to see you? And she totally accepts the fact that this is true, that and you wanted to have sex with him, and he turned down sex with you.
But I think she thinks through all that.
I don't know. It just, and I'm sure hearing it at the first time, hearing it from James Earl Jones, but none of that made sense. If he wanted, he could buy sex. he did not have to pretend to be penniless and work at your father's restaurant if he was just here to sow wild oats.
Yeah, so initially she does act badly to it. She reacts badly and is mad.
And I like the scene. There's a scene between John Amos and James Earl Jones, which I really like. Because John Amos has been an ass kisser. Because, like, it's the queen, it's the queen, it's the queen, it's the queen, it's the king, it's the queen. But the minute his daughter
is not good enough
for him, then he snaps into father mode. And that was a really good character trait right there. He offers him $2 million, and he rips up the check. He goes, there's no money in the world that you can give to me about this. So it shows his character. It shows that he may be a little money hungry, but it also shows that he has character.
Yes.
So Eddie Murphy ends up running after her, and they're on the subway train, and he's like, I'll renounce my princehood. And she's like, it would never work. So they get off the train, and... So we had the Frank Oz thing also in every one of John Landis's movies. I don't know if everyone, but he likes to have See You Next Tuesday.
Right.
And when they get off the train, there's a movie poster, a sci-fi movie poster called See You Next Tuesday. Right. So that's another little hidden thing in this movie.
There's a cute little moment, too, where he's trying to convince Lisa to you know, stay with me, da-da-da-da-da, you know, I want to marry you, and she... turns him down, no. And then there's this little sweet lady on the train that's like, I'll marry you, this little old lady, I'll marry you. And he gives her the earrings, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't he give her the earrings? Yeah. Gives her the ruby earrings or whatever. So it's kind of a cute little moment.
Eddie Murphy gives up.
He has to go back home.
And there's a nice scene between the king and the queen where basically she puts the king in his place. The queen does.
Yep. It's a good scene. She basically is like, you were wrong, you know?
And the king is big enough to realize he was wrong. Because at the end of the movie, Eddie Murphy is getting married.
We're back to where we started. We're back at this big ceremony. Which, by the way, we didn't really talk about this, but this scene is like... wonderful. The whole, like, in the very beginning with all the dancing and
it's a very well choreographed. It's like I said, it's a spectacle. You don't get movies like that nowadays. You don't get spectacles.
People have redone that scene for their own weddings, like with the dancers with the feathers and I've seen people on like social media who've tried to recreate that for their own wedding. I've seen people recreate like the Coming to America for their wedding or their, it's very, people love that whole scene. So here we are back in the beginning and you feel like, okay, Akeem's just accepted his lot in life. He's going to have to marry his prearranged, the girl that he the girl that will bark like a dog and hop on one leg for him. So he's just kind of like, all right, it's my princely duty, I'm just gonna do this. Well, surprise,
it's Lisa.
Ha ha, the parents have all conspired.
Yes.
And there's John Amos, and we flew her in, and guess who's really under the wedding veil?
Right.
It's Lisa. So he's very happy. He gets to marry the woman he loves. It's a fairy tale. She marries him. And they even have a beautiful, like, fairy tale, like Shrek, Cinderella, you know, they're in the carriage out amongst the people, waving, and he's like, are you sure you want to do this? And she's like, well, I can get used to this, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a really happy ending. It's very cute. The family's all happy. Everybody falls in love. It's very nice.
Yes. And that was Coming to America.
I love Coming to America. I guess just because, like I say, the romantic comedy, the visuals. I could have sworn that this movie won like an Oscar for costuming. It was nominated.
Okay.
It was nominated for costuming and for makeup. It won some other like smaller film awards. Eddie Murphy won some smaller film awards and stuff. But
because at this point Eddie Murphy is at his pinnacle. I mean, this is the biggest that Eddie Murphy is.
But he really, to your point earlier, he really had done, like, more action-y kind of comedies. You know, so this was, like, a romantic comedy that he hadn't really done before.
No. And Eddie Murphy is an attractive man.
And there were not a ton of black comedies like this.
No.
This was not a mainstream. You did not... There was no, you know, like Madea. There wasn't any of these, you know, black romantic comedies that were mainstream like this.
I love the fact that Eddie Murphy... It's not a black comedy.
It's not.
It's a comedy that stars a cast of African Americans.
That's what I very terribly said. The point I was trying to make a second ago is that this was a movie for everybody. It was not a quote unquote black movie.
Right.
You know.
And the fact that Eddie Murphy had the faith in John Landis to direct a 95% black cast.
Yeah. Because had this been flipped, if this would have been a white movie, if this was Enchanted or whatever, you'd have, instead of, you know...
John Singleton directing it or something.
Well, but you'd have, you know, this 90% white cast with, like, instead of Louis Anderson being the white guy in the restaurant, it would be a black guy.
Right,
it would be that's how normal, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Now, the last couple of years, that has changed dramatically, but... it's not a black movie, whatever that means, listeners. I don't know what that means. But I love this movie. This is one of those movies that if it's on, I'm watching it. I'm stopping and I'm watching it. It's like Overboard. It's like Big Trouble in Little China. I'm gonna stop and watch this movie.
All right, so I'm guessing you're choosing.
I'm choosing Coming to America.
I'm choosing The Three Amigos because it's more my kind of comedy.
It's
slapsticky and there's puns, and that's more my kind of.
I can definitely see that. I think we each have picked the one that fits our style.
Right.
For sure.
All right, well, that's it. But they're both great movies. Well, I think they're both great movies.
If you've never seen The Three Amigos and you're a fan of any of those guys, it's worth seeing it.
Yeah.
It's worth seeing it.
It is. I think they're both very, very watchable. Both very rewatchable. All right. That's it. I want to thank everybody for listening. Steph, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for asking.
And we'll see everybody here next time on the Which Is More Gooder podcast.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Which Is More Gooder podcast.
Cross the street.
This has been a Cross the Streams Media Podcast.